You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's podcast is going to be a Q&A, and I've pulled my questions mostly from Instagram, as I'm spending a lot more time on Instagram since the new Snapchat update. Still trying to do some Q&As on Snapchat, but a lot of my time on Instagram. So I pulled the questions from today's show off my Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness. So first question comes in from C. Hego on Instagram. What do you eat before working out in the morning? So I'm going to split this into two parts, because what I do and what I recommend aren't necessarily the same thing right now. And to give a little bit of more context to the rest of this question, he was asking what I do in the morning, because if you've been following my Instagram journey as I've been training for the Marathon de Sable, which is the Marathon of the Sands, it's a 256-kilometer self-sufficient race to the Sahara Desert, and that I'll be doing next week. So the 6th of April, I fly out. And he was asking why I train fasted and what I eat. Do I eat in the morning before I train? So over the last probably 4 or 5 months, particularly as I've started to ramp up my training, I've been training fasted first thing in the morning, but it's been intentionally trying to get my body used to functioning at a higher volume of cardiovascular fitness, so a lot of runs and aerobic runs with limited fuel source. So I've intentionally not been eating before my workouts for this reason. And so for me, it's been trying to condition my body to do with less food, because I've got to carry my food for 6 days in the Sahara. So I obviously can't bring 3,000 or 4,000 calories with me and have that every day, even though I'm running a marathon every day while I'm there. So I have to condition my body to work off less food. So that's the reason for that. And one of the things that I say regularly on the podcast, if you've listened before, and I will say regularly on my social media, is your nutritional strategy should always reverse engineer whatever it is, your goal that you're trying to achieve. So for me, it's conditioning my body to work off less food and be able to, you know, use ketones as a fuel source, or potentially use some of my muscle as a fuel source if I have to try and bring down my size, which I've been trying to do over the last couple of months. So I've been reverse engineering my goal of running in the desert for 6 days by myself with my food. So that's why I've been training fasted. However, if you're trying to build muscle, or you're trying to lose body fat, or you're trying to optimize your workout, you may not follow that same routine. So it's very important to know what the end goal is. I regularly say, and one of my favorite life adages that I live by is, you can't hit a target you can't see. But once you know what your end goal is, improving performance, building muscle, losing body fat, a combination of all three, you can work backwards. And eating before your workout is going to be very, very similar. So what I would advise is, when you know what that end goal is, build your eating strategy off the back of that. So for example, I have people coming through my online program, particularly my BKF online program, which is the general fitness program I have, where I work for an 8-week period with people, depending on whatever your goal is. So it's separate from my GA Lean Body program, which is working primarily with GA athletes. And the strategy we have for people coming through that program is different depending on the lifestyle and schedule. So for example, if you're somebody that trains first thing in the morning because it's the only time that fits into your schedule, we may build a strategy in place that's going to allow you to optimize your workout. So for example, if you train at 6 a.m. and you obviously don't want to get up at 5 a.m. to eat a meal and then have an hour to wait and then train, you may find that adding in some form of medium chain triglyceride and MCT oil with some whey protein or rice protein or vegan protein, whatever version you're using, may work really, really well for you during your workout to give you an energy hit. And then sipping on branched chain amino acids, or sipping on leucine, which is the primary ingredient in branched chain amino acids, may help support your workout without having to take in a meal before you train. The reason that this works is, and it's a personal preference of mine, is when you take a medium chain triglyceride, which is coconut oil or MCT oil or caprylic acid, your body can use those medium chain triglycerides as an energy source. So what happens is, you'll get that ketone release and you'll actually have a fuel source for your workout, so that your output in the gym or your workout doesn't suffer, which can happen sometimes when you train in the fastest state. If you haven't got food, if you haven't got energy, your workout's going to be subpar as a result, and then you're not going to be able to maximize your output. So whether your goal is building muscle or losing body fat, you're going to put a cap on yourself because your energy is going to be too low. That's why I quite like hacking it with some form of MCT oil, with either caffeine or with a protein shake of some sort. And then your branched chain amino acids to sip on during. What they'll do is one of two things. One, they'll give your body a fuel source to use, so you'll potentially be able to use those branched chain amino acids as an energy source during your workout, so you won't eat into the muscle that your body has. And that can happen sometimes if you're in a calorie deficit or you're training fasted and your calories are too low. Your body can turn to the muscle that you have in order to fuel the workouts, which isn't what you want regardless of your goal. If you're trying to improve your performance, if you're trying to build muscle and obviously preserve it, or you're trying to lose body fat, eating into your muscle is not going to support any of that, because the more lean muscle you have in your body, the higher your metabolism is going to be, which means the more calories you're going to burn throughout the day. So you always want to preserve the lean muscle that you have regardless of what the goal is. That's why branched chain amino acids and leucine, which is the most potent of those branched chain amino acids, BCAAs are a mixture of leucine, isoleucine, and valine, three amino acids, essential amino acids that your body can't make by itself. And making sure that you're getting that in will give you a fuel source to use, and it'll help preserve the muscle that you have, or else it'll give you an energy source during your workout so that your output is better. So that's why I'm a fan of them, particularly for fasted trainers. I'm not necessarily saying this is right or wrong, but I would never step foot in the gym and train fasted without BCAAs or leucine. And that's my own, knowing how my body responds, knowing my own knowledge on how beneficial branched chain amino acids and leucine can be, particularly in a fasted state, I would make a choice to never train fasted without them personally. So a lot of things come into play there. Your overall protein intake, your overall essential amino acid intake will all come into play. But the general rule that I'll follow is, if I'm training fasted, I'll always have branched chain amino acids, or I'll always have leucine with me. And then that can hack your not having food before a morning training session. So it gives you the best of all worlds, where you have an energy source, you've taken your medium chain triglycerides, or you've had it with a protein shake, so you have an energy source or a ketone release so that you're able to train at an optimal level, and you've got your branched chains or your leucine to help you preserve the muscle that you have, or to use as an energy source so your body doesn't eat into the muscle that you do have. So that would be my favorite way of hacking it. And then obviously you go into your post-workout protocol, whatever that is, some form of amino acid flush, where you're getting your recovery optimized because of the whey protein or vegan protein or rice protein that you're taking in, flushing your body with amino acids to speed up your recovery, and then your post-workout meal. So there are just a couple of options. Other people will have a fat source and a protein source. They'll wait an hour, 90 minutes, and then they'll train. Some people will have, you know, porridge or a complex carb and a protein source and wait an hour and a half, and then they'll train. And that's what works most optimally for them. So there is no one size fits all. If there was, everybody that trains in the morning would do that. It's playing around with it. If you're someone that is short on time and you need to fit your training into your lifestyle, into your schedule, because you've got to go to work and get your workout done, and you don't want to get up that extra hour earlier to eat or extra hour and a half earlier to eat, then that's just a quick hack that you can use. So always reverse it back off what your end goal is. So whether you're trying to build muscle, whether you're trying to lose body fat, whether you're trying to improve your performance, all of those tips can potentially help you and maximize your workout so that your actual energy levels don't suffer and your workout suffers as a result. So hopefully that helps. And hopefully it also helps explain why I've been training fasted for the last several months. It's more to do with me reverse engineering my trying to survive the 256 kilometers through the Sahara Desert next week, as opposed to any other body composition or reason that I'm doing it. So hopefully that helps. Okay, next question comes in from David Ryan on Instagram. I've seen a lot of bulk and cut plans contain carbs before bed. Can you explain the reason and effect this has on the body? So there's a couple of angles I can come at this from, because one of my biggest pet peeves in fitness and nutrition, and this drove me crazy for years, was the no carbs before bed, or no carbs after 6 p.m. That was the one that used to drive me crazy, because One, with the exception of coming at it from a cardio or circadian rhythm angle, your body doesn't really know what time it is. So if you're someone that works a night shift, your 6 p.m. could be your equivalent to 6 a.m. So that blanket statement of no carbs after 6 p.m. used to do my head in. But the reason that a lot of bulk and cut plans may contain carbs before bed is for a couple of reasons. One, your overall intake of carbs will be very much based off what it is that you're doing in your training program. The reason that I really, really struggle to advise someone nutritionally without knowing their exact training program is because your nutritional plan should feed into your training, and your training should feed into your nutritional plan, because it's very, very hard to offer a blanket statement on a nutritional advice when you don't know what training program you're following. If you're doing a strength program and you're working mainly for central nervous system strength, you probably don't need as many carbs as somebody that's doing a lot of metabolic conditioning or a lot of high-intensity interval training, where you're using glycogen and using glucose as your primary energy source, because you'll need to replenish that after training. So what I would advise is, when you are considering putting carbs in before bed, realize that it's not a right or wrong blanket statement on you should have carbs before bed and you shouldn't have carbs before bed. There's pros and cons to both. If you're coming out from a pro or a positive angle, your having carbohydrates before bed could potentially help you drop into a deeper sleep. Some people will have carbohydrates before bed and it will help them relax. It will give you a little bit of a slow release of insulin, particularly if it's a complex carb, and can help you fall into a deeper sleep as a result. And then when you drop into your deep rapid eye movement sleep, you may feel more recovered and as a result get better results. On the opposite side of that, some people will argue that having carbohydrates before bed can potentially have a negative effect on your body's ability to drop into the deepest sleep that's going to provide the most natural growth hormone, which again can speed up your recovery. So depending on the angle you come from, you're going to have people arguing on both sides. And with most things, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I love the Charlie Munger quote that you shouldn't have an opinion on something unless you can argue the opposite side better than the people who hold the opinion on that side. And that's kind of how I feel about carbs before bed. I can literally argue the pros and cons as equally well for both. So what I would advise is, the main thing, whatever your goal is, if you're trying to bulk or cut, which is the words you've used here in the question, it's your overall nutrition that's going to be key. It's not that one meal that's going to determine whether you progress or not. It's important, and adding all these things together can have a positive compound effect where you are literally putting your dominoes all in alignment and then knocking them over, and that could speed up your results. But one meal in isolation isn't going to make or break your progress, particularly your before bed meal. I would argue your pre and post workout meals are probably more important, but to have your carbs before bed is going to be down to the overall nutrition you're following. If it's fitting into your macros, or you're following a carb cycling plan, or they're helping you drop into a deeper sleep and they're supporting you depending on the time of the day you've trained, that is what's going to determine whether they work for you or not. If you train at 6 a.m. when you're super insulin sensitive after a good night's sleep, and then you train, you make yourself probably more insulin sensitive. Again, a lot of factors that come into play there, but in general terms, your body's going to utilize carbohydrates more effectively. That's effectively all insulin sensitivity is. It means that your body utilizes carbohydrates for energy. That's all carbohydrates do. They have some vitamins and minerals, but there's no essential carbohydrates. What they're there to do is give your body energy. There's essential fatty acids from fats, meaning your body can't make them by itself. There's essential amino acids from protein, again, meaning your body can't make it by itself. You need to get it from food or supplements. There's no essential carbohydrate. So all insulin sensitivity means is that you consume carbohydrates and you use it for energy. Insulin resistance is the opposite then. It means that you're using carbohydrates and your body's not effectively converting them into glucose, or is not effectively converting them and giving you energy. And so that's why you'll see a lot of overweight or obese people eating loads and loads and loads of carbs, and they're tired all the time because they're massively insulin resistant and their body isn't getting that energy kick that a regular gym goer or healthy athletic person does when they eat something sugary, eat something carby, where they get a good normal kick of energy. So what I would advise is, again, depending on your overall nutrition. If you're in a bulk, you're in a calorie surplus, eating more calories than your body needs so that you can grow. If you're in a cut, in a calorie deficit, so you're eating more less calories than your body needs so that you can reduce body fat, then timing your carbs is going to be very much down to your own personal preference. If it's helping you and supporting you and fits into your macro plan, depending on the time of the day you train, if you train first thing in the morning or you train late at night, you're going to be deciding whether you're having carbs based around those training times as well. So what I would advise is experiment with it. In my book, The Fitness Mindset, in the nutrition section, I spoke about my two favorite methods of utilizing nutrition before going to bed. So one was high fat and a moderate amount of carbohydrates, which has always worked best for me, particularly in MCT oil or some form of medium chain triglyceride before bed, because that ketone release just unwinds me and helps me sleep. And then I spoke in option B is using something like a complex carb like porridge or a moderate simple sugar like honey can again help you unwind and give you that little bit of a sugar hit or a slow release of carbohydrate that can relax you and allow you to drop into a deeper sleep. Depending on your personal, depending on your body's ability to, whether you're more carb adapted or fat adapted or work better off carbs or better off fats, you're going to find one of those two methods tends to work better. The one I would avoid is consuming too much protein before bed, because that's the one that can really mess you up. If you consume way too much protein, and I made this mistake for years, I used to eat two chicken breasts before bed thinking that, oh, well, I'll give my body some amino acids and I'll be drip feeding my body with amino acids through the night. But what happens is you get this chemical release of a hormone called orexin, which if you think of erect up, it keeps you up. And that's how I always remember it. And orexin is that hormone that will promote alertness. So if you have too much protein, your body releases orexin and it can keep you up at night because you're feeling too alert. So if you're staring at the ceiling because you've had 50 grams of protein and some cottage cheese or a piece of chicken or some tuna or whatever it is before bed, that's possibly why. So in that meal, I would always prioritize your carbs or your fats with a small amount of protein and not go too crazy on consuming 50 to 75 grams of protein right before bed, which is what I used to do because I thought that's what you were supposed to do in order to drip feed your body with amino acids so you could build muscle overnight. That was the whatever deduction I had drawn up from reading different books and magazines until I learned about the chemical response and the hormonal response. So that is the one I will watch out for. But what using your carbs before bed, whether you're bulking or cutting, is going to be down to how you digest carbs, what helps you drop into a deeper sleep, and realizing that your overall nutrition, your overall carb intake, your overall fat intake, your overall protein intake, that's going to determine your results in combination with your training program and the supplements you're using, and not just that one meal of whether to have carbs before bed or not. Okay, next question comes in from Johnny Keeley. This summer, I will be doing a lot of traveling, interrailing America for 6 weeks. Any tips on training and eating on a low budget when traveling? So I'm going to offer a couple of different perspectives on this one. As someone that travels quite a lot and quite regularly, I have a couple of tips for shorter term trips away and then tips that I would offer for, say, the 4 to 6 to 8 week duration or even longer, 12 weeks in some cases. I went on 3J1s, which is, for those of you outside of Ireland listening, is a student visa that you can do in college and allows you to go to the US or Canada where you can work legally for the summers. I did 3J1s, so I did a lot of traveling, particularly the west coast of the US. And there's a couple of tips I can offer for training and eating on a low budget when you're traveling. So the first thing, the training is very, very easy to do, regardless of where you're traveling in the world. Whether you're interrailing, whether you're going to America, whether you're going to Southeast Asia, training is very, very easy if you decide you want to prioritize doing something while you're away. One simple tip and trick I offer a lot of people, and I have a lot of people that come through my online program that either go away for a couple of weeks midway through or are looking to look their best before they go away. And one of the tips I'll offer is when you're traveling, you're doing so much walking and so much cardio that you're probably going to be burning through a lot more calories than normal, particularly if you're backpacking or you're carrying your pack with you at all times. So understanding that your actual calories in, calories out, even if you're going for drinks most nights and you're going out eating in random locations that you wouldn't normally eat, if you're walking, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 miles a day, in some cases, if you're traveling across Southeast Asia or interrailing or going across Western or Eastern America, you're going to find that you're walking a lot more. So you're actually burning a lot of calories while you're doing that. Another little tip that I'll offer is make sure that you're taking the stairs everywhere whenever you're going to a new city or going to a new place and you have options of lifts or elevators. Take the stairs. Make your actual travel experience turn into a mini workout just so that you get the best of both worlds and you don't set yourself back too much. The truth is, 6 weeks isn't going to set you back massively if you don't completely take the piss when you're away. And when I say take the piss, I mean go out getting blackout drunk every single night and living off pizza and whatever alcohol or whatever food you can get your hands on the following day. That's probably not going to help you, and you're going to struggle to get back in shape when you come back home and get back into your regular routine. But as long as you're not completely taking the piss, you're probably going to be okay. So when you're training, that's one little tip of increasing your actual cardiovascular output. The next is have some form of home workout that you can do anywhere. So for example, in my online program, I've got a home workout. There's two workouts in there that are just body weight based, that as long as you have enough space, like a small hotel room or a small bedroom, that you can do these workouts where you're literally using your body weight in a high intensity zone so that you're able to get some resistance training done, which will tear your fibers down to allow you to burn more calories throughout the day. And you're getting your heart rate up, which will allow you to burn more calories during the actual workout. Combining this for a 20 to 40 minute workout, depending on which version of the program you're using, is going to set you up for the day. And what I used to do when I would go for traveling for longer periods, probably the longest I went was a 5 week period. And what I would do is first thing in the morning, I would literally get up first thing in the morning and I would do a 20 to 40 minute hit, and that was it, done for the day. And what I found for me was it had this positive compound effect through the day, that when I had trained first thing in the morning, I wasn't making poor food choices because of needing a serotonin hit or needing a dopamine hit or for whatever reason. From a psychological point of view, I felt better. I would literally get up, I would do my 20 to 40 minute workout, I would have a shower, I'd get dressed, and I'd be ready for the day. And I always found that I wanted something clean after my workout, and that set me up for the rest of the day. And then I used to follow an 80-20 split where I would try and eat semi-clean 80% of the day, and in the evening I would go out for drinks, or I would have whatever meal I wanted, or have ice cream or whatever it was, and I would follow that 80-20. And I always found that my energy was so much higher. I never got tired, even when I was traveling with other people, when they would feel they needed to sleep, I wasn't as tired because my nutrition was pretty good. Because you can make decent food choices in most countries if you make the conscious choice that you are not going to eat in McDonald's 3 times a day, which can happen because of the convenience factor. So the training side, one is going to be walking more as often as you can and taking steps and stairs as opposed to elevators. Two, have a quick 20 to 40 minute workout that you do first thing in the morning, get it done and out of the way. And three is, you could potentially find a gym nearly anywhere in the world now if you decide to. So if you really do want to do a workout, even if it's just one a week, set that aside. You can go onto Yelp or you can go onto Google and you can put in gyms in your area, and you can go to a gym and get a day pass for that gym. So regardless of whether you're traveling through Europe or through America or through Southeast Asia or Australia, there's gyms everywhere. So if you really do want to do a workout, even if it's just for peace of mind and to keep your sanity, you can do that and realize that it's not a non-negotiable that, well, I can't go to the gym for 6 weeks because I'm traveling. Because you may find that you feel way less stressed when you get to the gym once or twice a week while you're away. So there are three options that you can do with training that you can plug straight in. The eating then is a little bit trickier, because depending on where you are, your food choice is going to be very, very different. America is probably the best and the worst place if you make a conscious choice to travel, because when you're traveling across the West Coast or East Coast, there's so many fast food joints and fast food restaurants that it can become very, very easy just to jump into the convenience factor. What I would advise, and what I did personally, and I've done it both ways, I've done the fast food chain. The last time I ate fast food at McDonald's and Wendy's and, oh God, every other fucking restaurant that I could think of when I did the West Coast of America, I felt the worst. That was the only time in my life when I actually had my six-pack abs completely disappeared because of all the fast food I was eating. And that was when I was 19. It was 11 years ago. That was the last time I've eaten fast food, because after that, I felt so sick. I felt so horrible. I found it so hard to get that little bit of body fat down and off. And then I started to research things like trans fatty acids, which I spoke about in the nutrition section of my book, that They're the only food that I can't argue a positive point for because it's poison for your body. Trans fatty acids are one of, they're basically just, if you see a fatty acid chemical makeup, you have an opposite side. Trans is the Latin for opposite side. You have an opposite side hydrogen ion, and that's how a trans fatty acid is made up, which basically means that it's just poison for your body. As soon as you consume it, your body doesn't know what it is, and it sends it to fat stores to keep it away from vital organs. When you understand the chemical makeup and what happens to your body and the hurdles that trans fatty acids push when you're actually trying to get your body fat down, it's very hard to consume those foods because of the knowledge factor. I've had a lot of people message that have read the book, and I've read it in some of the testimonies on Amazon, that knowledge is key in this area because it's very hard to make those choices when you realize that you're putting these massive hurdles of fat over your body that's going to be a lot harder to get into. And that's effectively what trans fatty acids do. They make it a lot harder for you to reduce your overall body fat. That's why if you've been consuming fast food for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years consistently, and you've got these layers of fat and you're struggling to break them down, that's probably from a visceral fat stores built up, which is, you've got two types of fat, your visceral fat, which is your fat over your organs. You've got your subcutaneous fat, which is your fat you can pull at. And when you have that buildup of visceral fat, and can trans fatty acids can massively enhance that, it can take a lot longer to get your body fat down, as opposed to somebody that's relatively lean, that doesn't eat that much fast food, or that has body fat from other foods. It can be sometimes quicker to get that body fat level down. So if you have a history of, you know, eating Chinese or McDonald's 3-4 times a week, that can slow down your body's ability to get into those fat stores. So it's not that it's impossible. It's just, if you are in that person and you're that person listening, you have to be a little bit more patient because of the amount of fat, visceral fat, that you may have built up. So just be mindful of that. And when you're traveling across places like America, where there's so many fast food restaurants, that can be the easy choice because it's so convenient. So what I would advise is, America is also amazing with different health chains, Whole Foods, and different alternative healthier restaurants. You just got to be a little bit more conscious of asking people or using a Google search to find those food choices and food and restaurant choices. And then when you go to your 7-Eleven and then you go to those stores that are on the street corners, making better choices, your things like your dark chocolate, your almonds, your nuts, your fruits, and consciously making those choices. That same thought process applies for coming across Europe in particular, the same in the Middle East, the same in Southeast Asia, same in Australia. It's just making conscious choices. Personally, I tend to bring food with me because I always have a peace of mind that if I struggle to get something, at least I've got some backup food. I've spoken in the past, I've healed my gut, and for those of you listening with a bad gut or irritable bowel syndrome or IBS, go check out the podcast episode I did on fixing my stomach problems and healing, literally healing my gut with proper probiotics, different supplements, different food choices that I switch to. And I'm always aware that you need to control the controllables. And when you're traveling and you've got stomach issues, you can get up into your own head about how you might get an IBS attack, or you might get a flare up in your stomach, or whatever it is that it looks like for you. For me, that peace of mind of knowing that I've got some bags of almonds or some protein powder or some oats in my backpack if I get stuck always gave me that peace of mind. So when I go traveling, and I do this if it's any time longer than a week, I always have food with me, just as a backup in case I can't get a meal or I can't get a snack or I can't find a restaurant. And I know then that I'm at least not going to have a stomach flare up. I'm not going to have having to resort to a fast food restaurant, which from a body composition point is detrimental, but from a health aspect, it's even worse. And that's kind of what I would do. So travel foods like your dried fruit, your nuts, your protein powder, your oats, all of these things you can bring with you. So what I would advise is, if you're someone that wants to make those conscious choices, make sure you're going to the proper restaurants where you can get good quality foods. Make sure when you're going to shops and you're stopping over in places that you're making good food choices, your fruits, your nuts, your different tins of tuna, your tins of fish, your delis in some cases, you're going to get some quality meats, and then have your backup plan of food where you've got your travel food in your backpack. Even if it's only enough to do you a little bit, it can give you that peace of mind that you'll never really be stuck, even if you can't find a restaurant or can't find a shop or can't find somewhere where you can get cleaner food. So that would be my advice if you're going traveling and you want to be conscious of not setting yourself back too much. The other argument that you may go and just have a ball, enjoy it, go eat, drink, and be merry, do the YOLO, and then fix it when you come back. And by all means, if you're listening to this and that's your personality type, go do that. But if you're the person that wants to be a little bit more conscious when you are aware and you don't want to set your back too much, hopefully the answer to this question will provide you with value. And for everyone that's outside of that bracket and is like, fuck it, just go and enjoy it, definitely 100% go do that if that's you. Always reverse engineer your personality type and everything that you do. And hopefully this provides value to the people that are listening that are curious about how to minimize any damage while they're traveling across anywhere for, you know, a 4, 6, or 8 week period. Okay, next question. I feel a bit tired during my workouts and looking for something to give me a little bit of an extra push to lifting heavier weights. Is there anything I should be taking a pre-workout, for example? So I wanted to answer this question because I know energy is something that a lot of people struggle with. So I'm going to come at it from a couple of different angles in the hope to provide value for anybody that is either trying to increase their energy for their workouts or increase their energy throughout the day. And the truth is, everything that you feel, particularly around your workout time, when you're trying to level up in terms of energy levels, is a direct feedback on how positive or negative your recovery and probably nutrition is. If you're consistently struggling for energy during workouts, there's a good chance that your recovery and your nutrition is off. If it only happens every once in a while, that can happen to anybody. A poor night's sleep, an extra stressful day, training too many days consistently. If it's happening sporadically, then by all means, taking a pre-workout or some caffeine or whatever it is can help, and it'll get you through that day. But if it's consistently tired that you're feeling during your workouts or throughout the day, it's a direct feedback that there's something off somewhere. So one of the subtitle of the fitness mindset was eat for energy, train for tension, manage your mindset, reap the results. And the reason I said eat for energy is because you can eat for composition and you can eat for energy, and they're not necessarily the same thing. So to flesh that out, when you're making certain food choices, your higher quality foods you eat, and when I say high quality, I mean your body's absorbing the foods you're eating, you're getting the vitamins and minerals from the foods you're eating, and you're getting everything that you need from that food to give your body energy or provide it with the nutrients it needs. To do a fitness plan or fitness program or to get your body in shape, you don't necessarily have to eat high quality foods. You can get into amazing shape eating things like protein bars, eating things like Pop-Tarts for some people that are in the IIFYM and they fit it into their macros, eating regular sugary drinks or energy drinks. All these things you can get into amazing shape with. If you have decent genetics, you have a good training program, your calories are either a surplus or a deficit, and you're getting all the macros that you need, you can get your body into pretty amazing shape. I know some, particularly back when I used to compete, when I used in my bodybuilding days, I knew some pretty incredibly shaped guys and girls whose diets were terrible by their own admission. And they, when I say terrible, I mean terrible from a nutrient sense in terms of they were tired all the time because they were eating 2 or 3 protein bars a day. They were drinking lots of cans of Monster. They would have some chicken and broccoli maybe during the day, and then they would make it up with other protein cookies, and they looked really good. They were in amazing shape, but they never had any energy and they were always groggy. And one of the reasons that it made me delve into the energy side of what food is actually supposed to do for our body was when I trialed that, and I made those poor food choices for me, and I would have my couple of protein bars a day, and I scaled back the amount of food I was eating and was just hitting macros, I was lean, and I was had a six-pack, and I had muscle, but my God, my energy was just felt like I was walking around like a zombie all the time. So to understand that you can be eating quote-unquote fit foods, but not be getting energy from them, might not necessarily land with some people because it didn't for me. I didn't fully understand that the difference between health and energy and having a fit six pack or, you know, flat stomach or bigger glutes or whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, they're not necessarily the same thing. So first thing I would look at is your nutrition. And I love the Richard Feynman quote that don't fool yourself when you're the easiest person to fool. If you're making quote unquote poor food choices, and I mean poor from an energy standpoint, nutrient dense standpoint, and you don't have any energy and you're wondering why, don't fool yourself into realizing that, well, you know, I'm eating protein bars and I'm eating all these, you know, frozen foods and I'm getting, you know, what I think I should be getting in terms of my macros and you have no energy. You have a direct feedback that something's not right there. And what I would advise is switching to higher quality foods for even a week, 10 days, and experiment with it. So any microwave food you're eating, one of the examples I use in the book was microwave rice turned to whole normal rice, where you're minimizing the amount of preservatives and stabilizers that you're consuming, and you're eating food in its wholest form possible. You're eating more fruits and vegetables, you're eating high quality meats, and you are avoiding or minimizing the amount of stimulants that you're using, your cans of Monster, your Red Bull. By all means, use them to give you a little bit of a pickup, but when you're relying on them for energy, it's a sign something else is off. So you got to just kind of analyze that and realize that the choices you're making may not be supporting the end goal, which is looking to increase your energy during your workouts. When you think I'll jump on a pre-workout or I'll jump on an energy drink and that'll get me through, that will by all means will work for a certain period of time. But you'll eventually blow out those receptors that will allow you to get that energy, and then you have to consume more and more and more and more. For a lot of you listening, you would have lived through the limit two scoops on a pre-workout where you've gone to three and you've gone to four and some of you have fucking gone to five. I know I have. Where you have to keep increasing the dosage to get the same hit you originally got. Caffeine is the same. The very first time you had a can of Red Bull or a cup of coffee even, it probably gave you a lot of energy. You probably felt very mentally focused. You probably felt a lot of physical energy. And now you may just take that same amount of caffeine to get through the day because you burn out those receptors or you build up a tolerance to that stimulant or that caffeine drink or the cup of coffee that you're drinking. So it means that you have to keep increasing it to get the same hit. And that's why pre-workouts, when you're consistently tired, just work as a band-aid short term, and you're eventually going to have to face the problem anyway. And that's why I would experiment with switching to higher quality foods for a shorter period of time and just see how your body responds. Because in 80% of cases, it tends to be just that you're making food choices that aren't giving your body everything it needs to improve your energy levels. So fruits and vegetables, good quality meats and fish, good complex carbohydrates in their original source, high quality fats, your MCT oil, your coconut oil, your avocados, your olive oil, getting all the things your body needs and then building your macros, whether you're in a surplus or a deficit, or carb cycling based around whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, lose body fat, build muscle, improve performance, reverse engineer your goal, and use your pre-workout or your caffeine or your stimulated drinks to move your energy level from a 9 to a 10. I spoke about this in a previous podcast episode. I can't remember which number it was, but when I was advising and expanding on pre-workouts, the way that I take my pre-workouts, and I'm not necessarily saying this is the best way, but this is what I do, is I take a pre-workout when my energy level is at an 8 or 9. And effectively, I take it on the days I don't feel I need it. And that can sound a little bit counterintuitive, but let me expand on the reason I do that. The reason that I take it on the days I feel I don't need it is because it moves me from an 8 or a 9 out of 10 on an energy level to a 10 out of 10, and then I have an incredible workout. If I need to take a pre-workout to go from a 2 to a 5 so I can get through my actual workout, it's a feedback that I haven't slept enough, my nutrition has been off, or I haven't been recovering, or I'm about to blow out my central nervous system and overtrain. So that is a direct feedback that it's time to step off, or look at my nutrition, or look at my recovery and sleep, which I'll talk to next, because it's the other 20% of where people's energy tends to fall down. So 80% of people, it tends to be in that nutrition bracket, and then using your pre-workout to move you from a 9 to a 10, if that's what fixes it, you get more energy from your food, and then using your caffeine, your stimulated drink, and your pre-workout, which is going to give you incredible output during your training. And then the other 20% of people who have fixed that and still don't see a difference, it's going to come down to your sleep. So one of the things that is very, very important to understand about sleep is you do most of your recovery in sleep. In the gym, all you're effectively doing is tearing fibers down and you're tearing muscle down, and you don't grow in the gym. You don't get results in the gym. Your body doesn't respond in the gym. Your body responds when you come out. You put it under a stressor stimulus for a certain period of time, and then you recover and repair. That's your nutrition and that's your sleep. So your 80% nutrition and then your 20% sleep. Your sleep quality is probably more important than your sleep quantity. And I spoke about that in the sleep section of the fitness mindset. And I spoke about it in the two podcast episodes I did on how to get a better night's sleep, which are worth checking out if you're someone that struggles with sleep. And one of the things that really helped me understand the different sleep cycles and recovery, particularly for athletes and people that go to the gym regularly or train regularly, is understanding your REM sleep, which is your rapid eye movement sleep. It's your deep restorative sleep. When you drop into REM sleep and deep sleep, that's when your body starts to produce natural hormone. It's when your body starts to repair itself and starts to download everything that's happened during the day. And when you drop into high quality REM sleep, you fall into 90-minute REM cycles, which means that every 90 minutes you drop into another REM cycle, presuming that you're not waking up midway through. And what I found that really helped me, and this is a hack I know has helped a lot of you listening, is waking up at the end of a REM cycle so that you're not waking up as groggy and you're getting higher sleep quality throughout the day. So, for example, for me, I know if I wake up after 6 hours, I feel more rested than if I wake up after 7 hours where I'm halfway through another REM cycle. So hacking that system and waking up on 6 hours or 7.5 hours or 9 hours can make you feel more refreshed when you get up. And you also don't get in your head about the, I have to get 8 hours sleep tonight or else I'm not going to feel rested. And I know myself, as someone who had poor sleep quality for years, and probably one of the reasons that I was able to delve into it so much because I had to try and figure it out myself, was I would go, and if I couldn't fall asleep straight away, I'm like, okay, if I fall asleep now, I get 7 hours of sleep. Okay, if I fall asleep now, I get 6.5 hours of sleep. Okay, if I fall asleep now, I'll get at least 6 hours of sleep and I'll be fine. I'll be recovered for the next day. And you're up in your head and you're not able to drop into a deep sleep. And as a result, you're not getting recovered and your energy level is going to suffer the whole next day. There's all these secondary negative effects that can come from not having good quality sleep. There's been studies done on our effect on insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance that were slightly more insulin resistant the following day after having not done had a high quality sleep the night before, which effectively means you're craving sugars and you're craving sugary foods the following day, and you need to reach for stimulants to try and bring your energy levels up. And you can have this negative effect where you have caffeine or stimulants circulating through your body, and again you've got your 10-hour half-life and you've got your certain stimulants that are peaking in your system when you're supposed to go to bed, and then you're staying up again that night and you have this negative cycle that goes on where you don't sleep on Monday, you're reaching for stimulant drinks and sugary foods because you're tired on Tuesday, and then that stimulant is still in your system when you go to bed on Tuesday night and you can't fall asleep, and the same thing happens until the weekend, and then you can finally have a good night's sleep on Saturday, and then the whole thing repeats again on Sunday. So there are a couple of things worth looking at, because when you fix your nutrition in combination with your sleep, getting into high quality sleep, using certain supplements if you need them. I'm a particular fan of things like GABA, 5-HTP, which is tryptophan, which is a amino acid that can work as a precursor to serotonin, so it can help you feel happier and unwind before you go to bed. GABA can relax your central nervous system. Magnesium is another one that can relax your central nervous system. Zinc can work as a precursor for testosterone, so it can help drop you into deeper sleep. These supplements can also help if your nutrition is good. It's when you combine them all and then you have your nutrition dialed in and you've got good quality foods that are giving you energy, you have high quality sleep where you're dropping into deep REM sleep and feeling recovered, and your energy in the gym is good, and then you add in your pre-workout or add in your caffeine or add in your stimulant drink and it moves it to a 9 or a 10. You consistently do that over time, you're going to get amazing results, as opposed to just taking a pre-workout as a band-aid over the problem. And when you combine all three, you not only get better results over the short term because your output's better, you feel better, your energy is better, you're going to get better results over the long term because you can sustain that. Right now, if your energy levels are slacking and you want to lift heavier weights or train harder, and you take your pre-workout or you up your stimulants, you're going to be able to do that for a certain period of time, and then you're going to end up maxing that out again, and then you're probably going to be worse off than you are right now. Whereas if you go back and fix the problem, go back to the drawing board, fix the nutrition, fix the sleep, and then increase your training output where your energy levels are better, then add in your pre-workouts and your stimulants and your caffeine, you're going to get an unbelievable compound effect where you're progressing and progressing and progressing because your output is better and your choices are better, and that's going to support the end goal. So hopefully that helps. And for anybody that wants more information on sleep, check out the sleep section of my book. Those supplements are all in there and the doses, or go check out the podcast episode on how to get a better night's sleep. There's two episodes. I can't remember what numbers they are, but if you search in iTunes or you search in Stitcher, you search on Google or on the website, probably the best, on briankeenfitness.com. Just put in Brian Keane and sleep. It'll bring it up, and hopefully that'll provide you with a lot of value if you're someone who suffers with poor sleep. Okay, next question comes in from Anonymous. I'm really struggling with negative friends. Every time I talk to them about my goals and dreams, they slag me off. What should I do? So the reason I wanted to answer this question was because I know there's a lot of you listening that have either friends or family members or people in your environment that when you speak of things you're trying to achieve, whether it's goals or dreams or just trying to become a better version of you, they knock it down and knock it back. And I'm going to answer this question from a couple of different angles, because as someone that's obviously had a lot of personal experience with this, it can be very, very disempowering when people that you think are your friends or family members that you think should support you, or whatever it is, story you've made up about it on why won't they help me become a better version of me, you can feel very, very disempowered and very, very weak mentally when you share your goals or dreams with the person you want to become and then it gets knocked back. I know I've had my own struggles with it personally, and I'm going to offer a couple of angles, because the truth is the choices you make probably in the next several months are largely going to determine where you go from here, because acknowledging it is the first thing. And then the decisions you make and the choices you make are going to be very, very important going forward, because there's a couple of different things you can do. And I'm going to come at this and kind of ad-lib this one a small bit. And I'm probably going to jump back and forth because of my own personal experiences with it, and the way that I choose to see the world now could probably help you a lot and anybody else in a similar position. So I'm going to try and answer this, and forgive me for jumping back and forth, but hopefully it will provide a lot of value to those of you in a similar position. So the first thing is very, very important to understand is, and you probably heard me speak on this in the podcast in the past, is that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And that is probably the most important thing to drill into your head more than anything else, because taking away the scientific studies done that if you surround yourself with five alcoholics, you'll become the sixth. If you surround yourself with five gym people, you'll become the sixth. All these studies that have been shown, I've lived it, where there's a reason that until the age of 25, I didn't have the confidence. I didn't have the confidence in myself to achieve and strive for the things that I knew that I was supposed to do. A lot of it came down to the environment I was in, the friends that I had. I remember being in circles of friends when I would share some of my goals and dreams and the things I want to achieve, and I would be knocked back and slagged. And I remember the feeling of helplessness that would come with that. And embarrassment was another feeling that would show up in me that I would question, oh, maybe they're right. And more times than not, I would be like, yeah, they're right. I don't need to go do those things. And what happens is, there are two types of people in this world. And one is when you're in that environment and there's people around you, your friends, your family members, your partners, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, and they're telling you you can't do something and they're slagging you off and making you feel helpless. You can use that fire and you can literally show them and use it as fuel on the days you don't want to do it and be like, I'm going to fucking show you what I'm going to do. But there's the other type of person that will let it beat them down and beat them down and beat them down. And then they never actually go for the thing that it is that they're trying to achieve. This looks different for everybody. For some people, it's starting your own business. It was for me in one case. For other people, it's changing the body composition. It was for me in another case. When I wanted to compete first, I had friends that made fun of me. In a lot of cases, it may be, you know, a relationship that you want to get out of. It may be just something that you're trying to achieve, your life purpose or whatever calling it is that you have that you feel called for. You're going to have people that are going to tell you you can't do it and they're going to slack you off. As somebody that came out the other side, what I found, and I spoke about this in the mindset section of my book, and I spoke about another podcast in the past, that one of the things I realized was those people that slag you off, those people that don't support you, all of that is an opinion and a perspective of that moment in time. That's how they feel at that moment in time. And there's probably their own insecurities projected onto you that when you tell them you want to do something and they tell you you can't do it, they're speaking to themselves. And when you start moving ahead of people or quote unquote ahead of people and becoming a better version of you, it's shining a light on them not doing their thing. And that can be very hard to take for the people that are sending those negative thoughts and negative energies your way. And when you realize that a really fucked up thing happens when you come out the other side, when you decide whatever it is you're trying to achieve. For me, it was competing in bodybuilding, becoming a fitness model, then it was starting my own business, all of leaving teaching. It was all of these things that I was called an idiot for. I was called a fool for. I didn't have a lot of support from certain people in my network. And when I came out the other side, and particularly when things like the podcast get as many downloads as it does every month, or 80, 90,000 downloads a month, when the book became on the bestseller list, when people would stop me in the street when I was around family members or friends to take photos or introduce themselves or say how a video or a post helped them, their opinions change. Because those same people that were around you, for me, the friends were cut. Family members I couldn't cut because it's very hard to cut your family. Even though you can cut everything that they say and the emotional weight that their words carry, you can't cut them physically. In my case, I couldn't cut them physically. And when they see the effect you have on other people, and I live by the effect you have on other people is the best currency in the world. And I'm very fortunate in the living that I make. But everything that I do is built off currency of trying to help as many people as I can. And when they see that, and when those people who once told you were an idiot or a fool or slagged you off see that, their opinions change. And what happens is new evidence is given. They see that you literally pushed past that point of discomfort. You pushed past the word they said, and then they never remember they fucking said it. They will say, we have what's called a hindsight bias. One of the cognitive biases in our brain where we look back and go, yeah, well, I knew you were going to make it. We've all done it in some shape or form where if you've gone to a football game or a soccer game or, you know, somebody scores or whatever it is, you're like, oh, yeah, I knew that team was going to hammer them or I knew they were going to win. That's a hindsight bias because if you knew that beforehand, you would have placed a massive bet on it and you would have won a fortune. It's a cognitive bias in our brain that we've evolved over time. And people have this, and I've seen it firsthand where I've had family members be like, I knew you were going to make it from day one. And I'm like, you fucking didn't, because they were the same people that were the most negative, had the most horrible words and called me the names that stuck with me and I used for fire and fuel on those days when I didn't want to get out of bed, when I didn't want to work two jobs, when I didn't want to do the work that needed to be done. I remember those words because you can use that fire for fuel. So realize that those opinions and those perspectives will change once you push past a certain point. The other advice I'd offer is the people you can cut, you fucking cut. I had a lot of toxic friendships in my mid-20s that when I would start to strive to what looked like bigger things for me, I had a lot of those friends either talk badly behind my back, some talk badly behind my front, and I'd rather get stabbed in the front than talk behind my back. But I had a lot of those friends send very negative comments my way because me trying to strive for bigger things was a shining light on the fact that they either didn't want to or were afraid to. And I cut them. And what I would advise is you need to be cutthroat with the people you cut in your life and realize that the people that are the most important will support you in everything that you do. I have a friend who is one of my best friends and will be until the day I die. I remember when I was on social welfare and I had no social media, I had no book, I had no podcast, I had nothing. I barely had two pennies to rub together. I had this friend who is still one of my best friends to this day, always tell me I was going to make it. And he still fucking does it. We were walking down the street in NUIG in Galway recently. He works in the college in NUIG. And we were talking about the Joe Rogan podcast. And I was telling him that one of my dreams was like, I want to get on Joe Rogan's podcast. And he was like, yeah, someday you will. And that was the talk he would tell me when I was on social welfare. And we would literally have conversations about what I wanted to be and where I wanted to go. And I didn't have two pennies to scratch together. He was like, you'll make it. You're going to make it, whatever it is. Those people stick because they support everything you do. But you got to be fucking smart in who those people are. I live by the 95-5 rule that I spend 95% of my time with the 5% of people who matter, the 5% of people who support me, the 5% of people who I support, who I love and cherish, and the flip on the other side. I'll spend 5% of my time with the other 95%, people you can't choose to be around, or the people that are just there. The people that are in the environment, whether they support you, whether they're positive, negative, or neutral, they're just there. But when you make that decision to switch 95% of your time and focus and energy into the 5% of people who really matter, and you start to realize that those 5% of people are worth 95% of your energy, and when you cut out those negative people in your life as much as you physically can. Some people you can't physically, but mentally you can turn off the amount of waste that you give their words. It allows you to start moving in the direction of the things that you want to achieve. I break my life into four quadrants. I've got health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. And I come back to those quadrants pretty regularly. My health is my physical appearance, my energy levels, my sleep, how I feel. My wealth is my bank account, never having to worry about paying bills. My health, wealth, love. My love is my relationships, my mother, my daughter, personal relationships, my inner circle. And my fulfillment is the podcast, books, the things that I get to do. And I come back to those four quadrants pretty regularly. And what happens is when you start focusing 95% of your energy on the 5% of people that matter, you get this beautiful compound effect of moving closer towards the things that it is that you're trying to achieve. And every time somebody comes into your life that is super negative or isn't supportive, you spot it so fucking quickly. There's a study or an old adage that has been scientifically disproven, but I love the story of the frog in the pot. And if they say if you put a frog into a boiling pot of water, it'll jump straight back out. But if you put a frog into a lukewarm pot of water and then gradually turn it up, it will stay in there and it'll boil alive. That's what your negative circle of friends are like. You won't notice it. You won't notice those habits that you're forming, those mental structures that you're making in your head. The chains of habits are too loose to be felt and they're too tight to be broken. And being around those people consistently is like being that frog in the pot. You can turn it up and you'll start getting more negative yourself and you'll start having this negative self-talk and then you'll never believe what it is you're trying to achieve. But when you pull yourself out of it, as soon as a negative person comes into your life, you spot it in the fucking instant. It nearly feels visceral to me now when I'm in a room with somebody who's being negative either towards me or somebody else, and I want to just disconnect myself from that person as soon as possible. Because when your environment is around those 95% of the time, around those 5% of people who support you and love you and will champion everything you do, every time somebody negative comes into that, you're like that frog jumping straight out of the water. You're like, well, I'm not fucking dealing with this. But if you involve yourself in it and you stay in that network of friends, or you stay in that environment where people are consistently putting you down and giving you that negative self-talk, you're really going to struggle because you keep turning up that water until it's boiling. And then before you know it, you're dead. And you're in the fucking 97-year-old lying on your deathbed, looking back on your life, realizing that you didn't do what you wanted to do because you listened to the words of people who didn't support what you were trying to achieve. Live by the 97-year-old rule. Look back. If your friends and if the people and the family and the people you're surrounding yourself with aren't supporting you becoming the best version of you, and it's not out of a place of love, because sometimes you will have family members who genuinely love you and friends who love you and don't want to see you take the chance in case something bad happens, that's different to knocking you back because they're projecting their own insecurities onto you. When your actions map to what it is that you're trying to achieve, that's when you're going to achieve those things. If you're 97 years old and those friends, those family members, the environment you're in isn't mapping and your actions aren't mapping to who it is you're trying to achieve, you need to fucking cut it, because otherwise you're going to have the same end results. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. If you're feeling negative and you don't feel confident about what it is you're doing, and your friends are making you feel bad, you're consistently feeling restless, or you're consistently feeling disempowered is probably a better word, and you feel that every time you share it, you're going to get knocked back down, and you expect a different result, that's the definition of insanity. My advice is do one of two things. You either completely disconnect yourself from that environment and you surround yourself with the 95% of the time with the 5% of people that matter, or you consistently use those words of those people to prove them wrong. I would personally combine the two. I would disconnect yourself as much as physically possible. And then on those fucking days you don't feel like doing it, on those days you're tired, on those days you don't want to get up, on those days when you really struggle, use the fire and use the words of those people who told you couldn't and knocked you back. Because one of those, what'll happen out the other side is they're going to have a hindsight bias, and I guarantee fucking it. For those of you listening now who make that decision, who decide to compete on stage, who decide to go play county football, who decide to leave their relationship, who decide to change their job, whatever that looks like for you, I guarantee when you make it happen and make it work in 2-3 years, those same people will come back and say, I knew you were going to do it. They'll always happen, and that's what happens consistently, because that's how people are and people don't change. I read a lot of Roman and Greek philosophy from 2000 years ago. Seneca in particular is my favorite Roman philosopher. People don't fucking change. It's the same problems we had 2000 years ago. It's why I take so much solace in reading those books. When you realize that it's your choice, and everything you do, every person you surround yourself with, every decision you make, and you own it and realize that it's your choice, the decision to make, that's when you start to get empowered. And when you take empowerment and you take ownership of everything that you're doing, you can achieve great things. But my advice is 95-5 rule, use the fire and make sure that the people you're surrounding yourself with, negative or positive, that it's your choice that you're making, and realize that if you don't do that now, you're going to be that frog in the pot who ends up boiled to death by just turning up the lukewarm water until it's boiling, until you're no more. So that is the last question of today. So a massive thank you for everyone that has sent in your questions. For any GEA players, I'm going to put on my GEA hat for a minute. For any GEA players listening, I am running my first ever GEA muscle camp on the 12th of May in the Clayton Hotel in Galway City. So the muscle camp is my first ever seminar for GEA players, which is broken into nutrition, training, supplements, mindset, and psychology. A full day seminar with me, where if you want to build muscle, lose body fat, improve your performance on the pitch for the season ahead, or coming into your championship season in May and June, this is going to be the seminar for you. So there's information on that on my website, briankeefitness.com. So the GEA Muscle Camp, just head over there and check the events page if you're a GEA player and you want to come spend the day with me in the Clayton Hotel in Galway on Saturday, the 12th of May, 2018. So for more information on me, you can head over to the website, briankeefitness.com. Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube is all Brian Keefe Fitness. Snapchat's BrianK019. Massive thank you for listening. Hope you got a lot of value in today's episode. Hit me up on the DM on Instagram, and please subscribe if you haven't already, and leave a review on the podcast. Thanks for listening. Catch you all next week.